Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Our show today is sponsored by Wisconsin Cheese Originals and produced by Jack Inslee. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and we're broadcasting today from the backyard of Roberta's Pizza, 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And before the show gets started, I wanted to take a minute to remind our listeners of Roberta's upcoming fundraiser this Tuesday, October 13th. Not only is Roberta's kicking out some of the best food in the borough, they're growing quite a bit of it themselves. Right above my head, and I'm sitting in a shipping container come radio station, are growing tomatoes, peppers, beans, and a myriad of other veggies. They're all kind of wriggling their way skyward, eventually to end up on the menu and on plates of diners at Roberta's. So Roberta's is holding this fundraiser next Tuesday, October 13th at 7 p.m. to raise money to start another urban farm. Their goal is to have 1 acre above ground by next year, which would just be absolutely incredible. So I would encourage everybody to come on out for that. It's again, this Tuesday, the 13th at 7 o'clock. It'll be a great meal, great music, and good mingling. Tickets are available. You can call Roberta's and get more information from them. So today we are going to be talking with a good friend, Mateo Keeler, who is owner and cheesemaker up at Jasper Hill Farm in Greensboro, Vermont. Jasper Hill Farm makes an array of incredible cheeses from their small herd of Ayrshire cows and also ages cheeses from small farms all across Vermont and now a little bit of New Hampshire as well, in a new venture called The Cellars at Jasper Hill. So we're going to get Mateo on the line here in just a moment, and we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will be talking with Mateo Keeler. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our show today is sponsored by Wisconsin Cheese Originals. The first annual Wisconsin Original Cheese Festival is going to take place this November 6th and 7th, 2009, in Madison, Wisconsin, and is going to celebrate the state's growing number of dairy artisans and award-winning collection of American original cheeses. If you head to the Cheese Fest, you can meet 40 cheesemakers and taste more than 100 cheeses. Check out www.wicheesefest.com to learn more about the festival. So Wisconsin cheese is good. We all know it's America's Dairyland, but today we're here to talk Vermont cheese with Mateo Keeler, owner and cheesemaker at Jasper Hill Farm. Are you with us, Mateo?
I sure am.
Awesome.
I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy Wednesday to, or Sunday, as it were, to come on the show.
Absolutely.
So I kind of wanted to skip the usual, you know, just how you got started question, and talk with you a little bit more about sort of your vision for Jasper Hill Farm and the sellers at Jasper Hill.
About why we got started, maybe?
About why we got started, exactly.
Forget about the how we got started. The why we got started is a lot more interesting, I think.
Exactly.
We're really looking at Jasper Hill as an economic vehicle for the renewal of our local dairy economy, and to basically demonstrate what's possible through collaboration and through the leveraging of strategic investments to redefine a niche of our dairy industry here. So Jasper Hill is really an economic and an agricultural experiment. You know, my background is in microfinance.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with microfinance institutions in India, Nepal, and Bangladesh.
Was that part of the Grameen Bank or one of those that we've heard about, or what was the company or the institution?
Well, I was working for the Center for Microfinance in Kathmandu.
Okay.
And they're an NGO that was in the process of going from the not-for-profit to for-profit as a service provider to microfinance institutions in South Asia. And they're funded by the Canadian International Development Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very transformative experience for me. You know, it showed me the power of entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and what it can do to kind of really elevate communities and empower people. And in that particular case, I was working mostly with neo-literate women. And, you know, when I stepped back and thought about what I wanted to do with my life, where I wanted to live, and my connections to place, Vermont, you know, my family has a deep emotional connection to this place,
now,
Greensboro.
I was going to ask where you're located.
We're in Greensboro, Vermont. It's in the Northeast Kingdom, which is the most rural and probably authentic part of the state. I like to say it's Vermont's last stand up here. And
Vermont is America's last stand, and the Northeast Kingdom is Vermont's last stand.
Exactly. You know, we do things a little differently. We're a little more neighborly. You know, a lot of America's corporatisms haven't intruded, and, you know, we still have a lot of folks that have never been to Burlington, never mind, you know, Boston or New York, Montreal.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say Walmart has no chance up against Willie's General Store. They could not compete.
Exactly. You know, if Willie's doesn't have it, you just don't need it. But you know, getting back to is when we looked at you know, where is it that we're going to, you know, sink some roots. I spent 15 years of my life after high school traveling, really working and traveling, and I got married. We're getting to that, you know, what are we going to do with this next phase of our life? And you know, we decided to move back to Greensboro, where my brother Andy had a business.
What kind of business was he running then?
He's a general contractor, So he was remodeling and building in the community, and we made an impulsive buy. We got, you know, basically priced out of the Lake District, Caspian Lake, where my family's been summering for 100 years during the dot-com bubble. And ended up deciding to buy a piece of land that was slated for subdivision up on top of the hill out of town. And at that point, we had no idea what we were going to do with it. And after really assessing, you know, our local economic fabric, and we decided that value-added dairy was the way to go.
Can you tell us a little bit about the dairy history of Greensboro? I know you said that there's quite a strong agricultural tie to dairy.
Absolutely. You know, the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont is a patchwork of fields and forests, and, you know, the original diversified farm, you know, farms are basically consist of, you know, some hayland, pasture, softwood lot, and a sugar bush generally. So we bought 264 acres, and which includes all of the above.
And this is you and your brother Andy?
Me and my brother Andy.
Okay.
And we basically took out a couple of mortgages on that land to finance our startup. We built a cheese house.
Yeah.
Right onto the end of an existing dairy barn, and set about demonstrating that it is possible to make a living on a rocky hillside farm in northern Vermont.
So I think that's interesting. You kind of have woven a lot of things together. You know, you've said to me before that you see cheese as sort of a vehicle for social and agricultural change. And now you've also sort of posited cheese as a vehicle for, you know, culinary and gustatory change as well, which, you know, reaches well beyond your small community up there in Greensboro.
Yeah, it's been amazing to I think our timing was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we caught that that wave just about right, just as the American artisan cheese and cheese generally became, like, you know, the next kind of big thing. We were there, and we worked really hard. Initially, it was just my brother Andy and I. We were milking cows and making cheese 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I don't think we had a day off for the first 18 months after we started.
Wow. I remember talking to Andy the first time I came up to visit you guys, which was now probably 5 or 6 years ago, and he was saying that, you know, 7 months into it, he was kind of thinking, woke up one morning at whatever, 4 to milk the cows, and he was like, what the hell did we get ourselves into?
No, that was just the beginning.
Yeah. So when you started, it was the two of you and also your wives helping with the cheese making, isn't that right?
Well, it was just Andy and I initially. It took about over a year for us to persuade our wives they should give up their day jobs and come come help us out. And that really was a turning point for Jasper Hill Farm. You know, it basically demonstrated to us how much of a challenge, you know, there it's like multifaceted challenges to starting up a farmstead cheese business. And if you don't have family labor, resources, you know, you've got to be so good at so many different things to succeed. It really is a wonder that American cheesemakers have gotten where they are, because the challenges are just huge. And you know, when we started making cheese at about that time, we were approached by Cabot Creamery.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, basically they wanted us to make a private label English style cloth bound cheddar for them with our milk.
Okay. And so Cabot, just to back up for like 2 seconds, they're a very well respected dairy co-op in Vermont. Is that right? Farms
absolutely.
Love Cabot.
They are the backbone of the dairy industry in Vermont. They basically are a co-op owned by 1,600 dairy farmers.
Wow.
They market, about 2% of the nation's milk supply.
Wow.
So they're a big player. They make millions of pounds of cheddar and, sour cream, cottage cheese, really high quality dairy products. They really are good at what they do. And, we have a 3-pound block of Cabot in the fridge most of the time. Because the cheese is good. But
so as opposed to, say, some of the other, big dairy co-ops that we see, lining the grocery store shelves, Cabot is really, talking the talk and walking the walk because they're owned by the farms and supporting all, basically an entire state.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're a fixture on the landscape here. And, we're two towns over. We're just two towns north of Cabot, so they're in the neighborhood as well. The town of Cabot, where Cabot Creamery is, they also have a plant in Middlebury. But we hadn't sold an ounce of cheese at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We started making cheese in May of 2003, and we got this call in July of 2003, and invited the plant manager and the new products manager over to check out our facility, and it became pretty clear pretty quickly that might not have been such a good idea. But instead of just dismissing them, we talked to them about what kind of arrangement we might be able to come to help them develop a product. And we laid out a framework that would allow us to get behind cheese produced at their facility. And basically, what we were interested in and what we're committed to is creating products and tying them to a place on, on the landscape. And so we asked them to identify a single farm to produce milk for this product, and then of course no BSC nor no hormones or any of that nasty stuff. Milk needed to meet a certain microbiological qualities, and then the last thing was no Jersey cows. So
you hate Jersey cows.
No, I love Jersey cows.
For cheese making.
They make great cream and butter.
Yeah.
And, if you're making soft cheeses or, their milk is perfectly appropriate for that sort of thing. But generally, when you're looking at cheese making milk, fat can be a real problem. And so we wanted to limit the possibility of bitterness. In the cheese, and you can get a lot of rancidity, off flavors, lipacy flavors, and bitterness.
Lipacy, I'm sure a word that all of our listeners are tossing around all the time.
I think that's code for bile and vomit.
Oh, it's such a
polite,
good job.
The polite word would be bilious.
Bilious. That sounds kind of nice. My brother's name is Billy. I can get down with that. But so actually, we're coming up. I think we need to take a really quick break. But when we come back, you're sort of setting up, you're planting the seed, as it were, for the conversation about the cellars, which of course is your most recent project and the most sort of exciting thing to happen with American cheese, ever. So we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll launch back into the cellars at Jasper Hill and how you went from an idea with Cabot to an amazing facility and a cheese robot.
Got a cat that's
We're back on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. My name is Ann Saxelby. I am joined today by Mateo Keeler of Jasper Hill Farm, and our show has been sponsored by Wisconsin Cheese Originals. So, Mateo, we were talking about this cloth-bound cheddar and how there's no way that you had enough space at your farm to make that cheese.
Absolutely. So, you know, we went through the R&D process, and the product was just fantastic. And, you know, we had we recognized that we had an opportunity to leverage this one cheese to address a lot of the issues that we had experienced for other startups. And
like what? What are some of those issues that plagued you guys in the beginning?
Well, when we, you know, when we stepped back and deconstructed our experience as a startup, we saw that about 60% of our total labor was actually spent aging, taking care of the cheese while it was aging, and, you know, packing and shipping.
Uh-huh.
And that portion of the process was more than making the milk and turning that milk into cheese combined in terms of hours of
wow.
labor.
Wow.
And then there's, you know, the marketing and sales piece, which is a real challenge and poses, you know, it's a real barrier for a lot of folks who might otherwise be able to produce delicious cheese. The third was actually getting product to market. When we started our business, we were a FedEx-based business.
Yep, that's how most of the cheeses that I sell arrive to my store, which bothers me daily.
You know, and FedEx adds a lot of cost to the product, and generally, you know, cheeses show up temperature abused, and the quality is impacted.
Oh, yeah, and not to mention all the extra packing materials involved with sending cheese FedEx. It's kind of a nightmare.
Exactly, and then if you think about a state like Vermont, it's got about 45 cheesemakers, and most cheesemakers are FedExing their product on Sundays. They spend the day, you know, wrapping cheese and filling boxes for FedEx. You know, there's certain things that it seemed to us would make sense to centralize, and that was one of them for sure. And the Cabot Clothbound gave us the weight that we needed to build a distribution system and to be able to ship pallets of cheese on a refrigerated truck. And so basically that cheddar formed a base weight in our Bailey Hazen Blue and Constant Bliss. And then cheeses from Twig Farm and Willow Hill, Bonneview Farm, and other cheesemakers from around the state started, you know, being consolidated on top of that Cabot cloth-bound cheddar and moving out into the marketplace. And eventually, you know, we're seeing Constant Bliss showing up in better condition at a much better price point on counters that were previously way out of our reach.
Sure. So Cabot was kind of the base of the pyramid, as it were, for all these small cheesemakers who don't make cheese in great quantity but make cheese of great quality that should be sent out.
Exactly. And, you know, on the other side of the equation, we're providing a service to our customers who could get a hold of cheeses with one phone call, where otherwise they might it might take 20 phone calls and 20 invoices and 20 shipping problems to deal with. And so,
sure.
You know, it opens up a market to our customer base and to the cheesemakers as well.
So the sellers themselves, what is the structure of the sellers like, and how did what was the construction like, and just try to describe for us what the sellers look like, because to somebody who's never been, you know, it's kind of an abstract idea, like Cheese Cave and the Northeast Kingdom.
Yeah, it's until you have been, it is really hard to conceive of the scale. I walk in the morning sometime and I go, wow, because the scale of the building itself is pretty intense. We've got basically 22,000 square feet underground. A great big elliptical retaining wall that holds back the hillside, and seven vaulted tunnels that run back into the hill. We're about 27 feet underground.
Wow.
And we have five, climate-controlled caves. And basically, when I mean climate-controlled, I'm talking about cellar temperatures.
Which stay constant also because you're under all that earth.
Exactly, because outside the weather is generally raging. You know, we have the temperatures here dip down to 40 below at the dead of winter, and you know, you might hit 90 degrees for a day or two in the height of the summer, and so that's 130 degrees. But we're able to really control those temperature fluctuations by maintaining that deep underground by being underground. It's working. Thank goodness.
Yeah, definitely. So now you're saying, so by starting the cellars, you wanted to consolidate labor, you wanted to consolidate sort of different pieces of the distribution marketing puzzle, as it was, for different farms. How many partner farms do you guys work with currently that bring, that, you know, send their cheeses up to the cellars to be aged?
Right now, we are working with 10 different cheesemakers. And we have space for about 40 producers, scale, Jasper Hill farm size. So, that's about 2 million pounds of cheese.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
You can make a lot of cheese on a farm our size. We only milk about 40 cows, but we produce just under 80,000 pounds of cheese a year.
That's a lot of cheese.
That's a lot of cheese.
That is a lot of cheese. So can you describe to us a little bit, when the cheese arrives at the cellars, what happens to it? What kind of services do you guys provide? How do you, love and coddle the cheese and, make it better?
Well, the first thing that we do is we actually we pay cheesemakers for their cheese on delivery. So, where a cheesemaker might have to wait, 2, 5, 10 months to get their cash out of their product,
mm-hmm.
We're able to basically pay them a portion of the final value of the product on delivery. So we're actually cash flowing their businesses. And one way to think about the sellers at Jasper Hill is as a bank, which is how it was conceived initially, is like an ag finance mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And because cheese is the original store of value, it is like capital. It increases in value over time. And what we're doing is basically, bringing that green cheese in, providing whatever kind of labor is necessary to proper and environment to properly ripen that cheese.
Mm-hmm.
We do all the marketing and sales and the branding for those producers,
mm-hmm.
and then we get that product to market.
And in addition to, and while you're doing all that other stuff, which, is enough to be like, probably 20 full-time jobs for one person, you're also you're facilitating better cheese making. You're helping people with their recipes, you're troubleshooting, you're communicating with them about how the cheese is developing, what batches were good, what, needs improvement.
Yes, exactly. We're basically trying to elevate the technical capacity of the industry as a whole by training folks on how to use pH meters and measure acidity really control their process start to finish. I always say there's two types of cheesemakers out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's the bowlers, you know, where you add your starter culture and then you just basically stand back and see what happens. And then you've got the curlers, and the curlers are cheesemakers who are intervening in the process at every step and are in control of their process. And you know, we're also looking at helping cheesemakers source equipment that will allow them to be more efficient, more profitable, and deliver products to the sellers that are higher quality and a better value for our customers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any you know, bowling metaphor used at any point is fine by me, but I think that one's particularly appropriate because, you know, the acidity curve is you know, sort of the most important part of cheesemaking, and that little bowling curve, too, makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you tell us just a little bit? I know that you had a gentleman who you like to call the cheese ninja come and sort of illustrate in real time what that acidity curve means for people and how that kind of collectively changed people's conceptions about how to make good cheese.
Sure. I had the good fortune of meeting Yvonne Larcher the last time I was in Europe. He's been working with Niels Yard Dairy quite a bit, which is my old stomping grounds. Niels Yard Dairy is a retailer, and they do they work with cheesemakers in the UK and Ireland in a similar way that we are working with cheesemakers in Vermont. And Yvonne is incredibly practical, super experienced dairy consultant that has been able to really synthesize and communicate like complex technical ideas and chemistry for cheesemakers and really help them drill down into their process. Because you can, you know, cheesemaking is interesting because it's not like following a recipe. You can't just do the same thing every day and end up with the same result.
There's
a lot of this is, you know, invisible to the eye, and milk changes every day. So as a cheesemaker, you need to be able to recognize and anticipate changes in milk quality and...
And I'm sure that changes with the weather, with each cow and their lactation cycle, with what they're eating, and
The weather. So how do you end up with the same consistently great cheese day after day after day? You have to really understand your process, and so we've deployed the Ninja to help our producers and ourselves, and to great effect, I might add. It's been really exciting, and that's one of the things that keeps me getting up every day. Is that in cheese making, you know, there's so much to learn. There's never a dull moment.
And like you said, so much of the stuff that there is to learn, it's kind of like being like a Buddhist monk or something. You just have to sort of be super alert and super vigilant to, like, you know, microscopic changes. So to be able to have someone illuminate that and inspire cheesemakers too, who can be, you know, farmers and cheesemakers can be sort of a stubborn lot. So to get somebody in who's who can make an impact and make a positive change for everybody, is just amazing. And I think it's amazing work that you guys do, that you really make that possible. You're raising the bar for cheese quality in Vermont and across the whole country.
It's exercising consciousness over time. I like the Buddha. just like the Buddha.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think we're actually out of time, but I'm hoping that you'll come back and do a follow-up show where we can talk about all of the stuff that we didn't get to discuss today.
Absolutely. There's so much to say.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to coming up and visiting the farm soon.
Absolutely. And cutting the curds.
Cutting the curds. All right. We'll get you in to do a plug for the radio station one of these days. Next time you're in New York, you got to come to Roberta's.
Absolutely will.
All right. Thanks, Mateo. Have a great, great afternoon. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you, Ann Saxelby.
Of chances.